Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to the NXT Review. I'm Adam Wilborn from What Culture, joined by one of the Dadley Boys, Michael Sidgwick from What Culture, to review everything that happened on last night's episode of NXT. But before we get into it, if you're a fan of this sort of thing, make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling on either iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from for daily wrestling podcasts, where we not only review NXT, but also Raw, SmackDown, AW Dynamite, AW Rampage, pay-per-views, we have interviews, roundtable discussions, and a roundup of the week complete with a bloody good quiz, of course, on WrestleCulture. As I said, though, joined by Michael Sidgwick, Michael Hamfler, enjoying a well-earned week off. Sig, what did you make of last night's episode of NXT? It was a show.
It was a show. My God, it was boring. My God, it was boring. None of these acts on it felt remotely relevant, hot, must-see. The action was passable. There was some good work done, but yeah, that's the standard these days. I just emerged from the viewing experience entirely bored, unmoved. I don't want this to impact the content, but if you're giving us something just so solid, then I'm going to be a little bit bored. I'll try and do some jokes.
Yeah, this felt like a show where not only were they taping like three, four shows or whatever it was in a big group, but also they were like, yeah, don't get too attached to storylines because it could all change when the colour comes in the next few weeks, yeah, or whatever, when we go all Nickelodeon. But I suppose there was eventful things.
Not really, mate.
I'll find five bullet points to put with this, so it's going to happen eventually. Let's start at the beginning of the show because we had Mandy Rose's in-ring return. I was about to say debut there. In-ring return. She opened the show. Coming out to take on Saray. Always good to see Saray. You and I are big fans of hers. And yeah, very simple story being told here. Mandy Rose is the heel. She's got Gigi Dolin. She's got JC Jane at ringside for her. She's taking Saray down. She's the more experienced competitor, at least.
In their bloody world.
Yes. I did like the bit where she does like a push up off the back of Saray. I love the old school classic heel, that sort of thing. Anyway. Saray eventually fights back and gets her own back on Mandy Rose for doing push-ups on her back by just dropping her on her head. Perfect plex. All safe, of course. There was a guillotine choke in there, and then she gets the Muda lock later on Mandy Rose, who gets out of here by just poking her in the eye. Again, just classic heel stuff, this. Saray, I just love her striking, let alone her kicks. There's just so much, you know. She throws a whole body into it. That's what she does. And Rose responds by slapping across the face. So Saray just drop kicks her as hard as she can. Rose falls into the ropes. We all know what comes then. That excellent finishing flying drop kick that she does. She does that. She hits her so hard. Rose spills out to the floor and is selling her face. Gigi Dolin, JC Jane, they grab a towel. They cover up Mandy Rose. She's been injured in storyline, I assume. We haven't heard any reports or anything. She's been disfigured by this finisher. She runs away, and Saray wins via countout.
I've got very few thoughts on the match. It was designed to spotlight this new Mandy Rose character more so than it was Saray. You got glimpses of Saray being awesome, but as you said, it was mostly just positioning Mandy Rose as a heel. And you know what? That isn't a bad thing to do necessarily. It wasn't an exactly thrilling match, but at least the heels are performing and wrestling like heels in this brand where heel versus heel matches are just all action, which is just so odd. Like, I will say that the Capitol Wrestling Center got absolutely worked big time. There were reports from the tapings. I don't tend to seek out spoilers, but this one just happened to crop up on my timeline of Mandy Rose horrifically injured on NXT tapings. like took a really bad bump off that Saray dropkick on the ropes. She put her head back, was like, nope, I'm not taking that. Even for the sake of selling disfigurement, I'm not going anywhere near that. Just head back. How could you fall for that?
Mm.
People did. There's a spoiler report circulated that Mandy Rose was really injured. I mean, I think it was tempered by the fact that, oh, it might be a storyline. Yeah. No, Sherlock.
Lot of audio sweetening I noticed on this show as well, by the way.
Yes, you kind of have to.
It was one match and it was just like it was like playing the old FIFA when it was just like, whoa, whoa. And I was like, nothing's happening. Lads, what's going on?
I mean, this is odd. The finish was odd. I understand that she will probably return under a mask. But like, Wilborn, help me out. What was this? If she's going to teach Gigi Dolin, and what's the other one called?
JC Jane.
And JC Jane, like the keys to victory, how to succeed. Basically, you just get yourself intentionally counted out by faking an injury.
Yeah, she did say, if you never want to feel like this again, come with me. And presumably that means losing a match via pinfall.
Yes. I would have thought losing in general.
Yeah, no. She said, if you never want to feel like this, like I've lost because of a pinfall.
Wilborn. Let's see how it plays out.
Hey, it's a very good point.
I love that. It's like a wrestler and like they've been beaten 50 million times. They've been like embarrassed with a gimmick. And then there's like the slightest hint of a storyline direction that you can't take seriously. Come on, guys. Let's see how this one plays out.
Here's a quick question because I'm bored already talking about NXT.
It's so boring.
When was the one time when you bought into that and then it was cut out from underneath you and you went, well, I'm never going to fall for that one again?
Oh,
because for me it was the Summer of Punk, because I was like, give it time, guys, something's going on here. They brought Kevin Nash. Sorry, what's happening? He's lost, right? And now they're tagging and he's taking the pinfall against R-Truth, and now he's finally won the title and it's bloody November, and I was just like, right, so see how this plays out. It's a load of bollocks.
It is a load of bollocks. Mine came a little bit later, I regret to say, because it makes me look like a mug. But I'd literally watched week to week the Summer of Punk and realised, Jesus Christ, this company is absolutely impervious to the change that is getting projected on them at like a deafening volume in those arenas. And it was because of that volume, and because I just thought, well, like, they can't ignore that. It's so loud. They are hijacking every show. John Cena and Randy Orton had a match at the 2014 Royal Rumble. And it's like, it just got emphatically rejected. I'm thinking, something has to change, obviously. And I stuck with the Daniel Bryan thing for a long time, even though it was clear when they resumed the Bryan Orton program after SummerSlam 2013. And it was just like, are you going through your Rolodex of corny finishes to buy time to get to, oh, well, they're not going to do Daniel Bryan versus Randy Orton. So how are they going to do this? Oh, they're relegating Daniel Bryan at Survivor Series 2013. And that was it.
Like, looking back now, WWE goes, what was a hell of a story we told, like, from SummerSlam all the way through to WrestleMania. No, if you hadn't have had the issues with Punk and the, like you say, emphatic rejection across the board.
WWE, Batista, Orton, Cena, yeah.
Then you would have gone, well, if they didn't have that, they'd have gone, Batista, Randy Orton, main event of WrestleMania, guys.
For this to have made any sense, they would have had to have buried Batista deliberately when there was no point, because it wasn't as if Brian wasn't completely white hot and hugely over. And, you know, CM Punk, if you could just, you know, fake leave on purpose just to get this over. It was already over.
Yeah. Nonsense. Anyway, back to NXT. Tommaso Ciampa, great promo, as always, from him. He's sitting, he's got an empty chair next to him that's normally occupied by Toothless Timmy, in his words. He's pissed off, obviously, with Ridge Holland that they got attacked by Holland and the rest of them, and they've injured Timothy Thatcher. He's fighting for NXT for his family. He said he's not going to, you know, get upset and cry over spilled milk, but he said a motivated Ciampa is a scary Ciampa, and he hoists the chair behind him. It slams against the little shutter wall, and he storms off. I mean, on a show where it was just sort of coasting along, this did get me a little bit fired up for the main event.
A little bit. I jumped a little bit when he threw that chair. Oh, you bloody are scary.
He is doing some great stuff, to be fair, considering we were just like, if he's not in and around the title picture, I don't really know what he's doing. They've hit a hell of a stride with him. I do hope that he features in their plans going forward, despite the fact he's so small. compared to what Vince wants, of course, not in reality. Right, next up, it was Kyle O'Reilly versus Duke Bloody Hudson. Again, sort of quite old school wrestling, this, in terms of Kyle O'Reilly comes out, he's got his ribs taped up, of course, because of the war he went through at TakeOver, and it's a target for Duke Bloody Hudson, and that's exactly what happens. He works over the ribs. Eventually, O'Reilly fights back, hits a tilt whirl into a guillotine choke, but Hudson powers out of it and suplexes O'Reilly for a nice near fall. He catches later on Hudson with a dragon screw leg drop whilst he's on the apron, climbs up the ropes, hits that flying knee drop of his onto Hudson's leg, and finally, after attempting it a few times during the match, locks in the heel hook for the submission victory. And they put him over effectively as, well, probably the next challenger for Samoa Joe.
Dry, functional, quite a well-worked match considering that Vink, Duke Bloody Hudson, isn't going to be confused with a super worker, but he's got presence, he exudes a real sense of composure and smugness and personality. Kyle O'Reilly worked with him and guided him to a pretty good match. This felt more than anything to me like a glimpse into the actual new rebooted NXT in which super worker Kyle O'Reilly guides less experienced, less talented opponent to a match that meets just about the mid-card NXT standard. It's not really going to be electrifying going forward, one would think, but these things take time.
Yeah, nice little thing. Set it up last week with him taking the piss about, you know, him getting involved in that massive promo train with Samoa Joe, and then he defies the odds yet again, defeats him, and maybe he could beat Samoa Joe, and that's the story they're telling there.
Incredibly logical.
Yes.
Is how I would put this.
Painfully logical.
Painfully, incredibly logical. You get the guy over in defeat. You work a story around respective body parts and which one's more damaged and who's got more fire and more skill. And you get the desired outcome in which the result is right, but you don't make a mockery of the guy that you really want to build as a long-term prospect. This is the kind of thing, right, where a pro wrestling reviewer online, who is not me, would, like, marvel at this. It's like the structure of a match without feeling anything massively yes. towards it. And it's like you're reviewing a table. Like, you talk in terms of, oh, this is solid, this is sturdy, the structure was great. It's like, it's pro wrestling. It's not a bit of apparatus.
No.
You are meant to feel something for it. Like, you are putting over bridges in tables and structures. Like,
I don't really like this, yeah.
Can I feel something?
Yeah.
It's so odd the way people go on.
Yeah, it's like someone getting excited on, like, Top Gear or whatever it is, going, this car gets you from A to B. So, like, you want to be there like, oh my God, I got more than 60 in like 3 seconds and then look at what does do the corners. But in reality, he's like, get in there. It's faster than walking, so. What? It's exactly, that's a hell of a, I really like that analogy. Right, we follow that up with Ilya Dragunov, the new NXT UK champion. He came out. I'm never one to wish an injury on anyone, but if he could just keep that horrific scar cut he's got above his eye, I think he looks like a badass with that, really. And he comes out, and he isn't just fine because it's been 2 weeks since TakeOver. Obviously, he hasn't come to the same, but even so, he comes out, he's limping because, yeah, he went to a 6-star? What did they get?
5.25.
5.25 star match with what well-deserved in Meltzer star ratings, in my opinion. He's out there. He basically comes out and goes, still alive! I'm still alive. And he says not only is he alive, he's more alive than ever before. He feels like a man that survived the most intense battle of his life, because he did. He likes it here in NXT. He's going away now. He's going presumably back to just that dingy BT Sports studio for NXT UK, but he will be back again soon. And the crowd do really appreciate him. He puts out an open challenge, effectively saying, who's going to be the person willing to take this NXT UK championship away from him? He says, the ring general has fallen. Long live the Tsar. We anticipated an interruption this, but a nice sort of drawing a line under Dragunov's appearances in NXT, I think he's been a hell of an addition, even though he shouldn't have lost to Pete Dunne, probably.
No, he probably should not have lost to Pete Dunne, but in the end, it didn't matter. And that's the problem with NXT. You can't really love it week to week because of the asinine booking and the drab booking, and then they rely on these exceptional performers, of which Dragunov is included, of course, to deliver a sensational classic match, and decent enough promo that got an enthusiastic response. This is just nice more than anything. It didn't have any big narrative impetus or even purpose, if you like, mm-hmm. but ultimately it just got over the idea that being a champion and delivering a classic matters to such a degree that they are willing to just spend a couple of minutes in celebration of that. These little tiny nuances help get people over. This is something that AEW Dynamite doesn't do often enough. They just registered and luxuriated in, we've got a guy who's just delivered a classic. Let's celebrate that for no real purpose other than to gradually make everything mean something.
A hell of a transformation when you think back to like Worlds Collide, because I really enjoyed his match with Finn Balor. They, again, just beat the crap out of each other. But when he made his entrance, I mean, you're going up against Finn Balor in terms of entrance. It's not really fair, but it did seem like people were like, now, look how well he's received.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right, we get a sit-down interview with former WCPW wrestler. I think she's done some stuff in NXT UK as well. Kaylee Ray, Arash Markazi, sits down with her, and she buries the entire female roster. Brilliant heel stuff, this. She picks off everyone from Raquel Gonzalez to Io Shirai to Ember Moon, who she's very keen to point out is, you know, just in her way an obstacle, going to get, you know, one going to get injured, but I'm just going to take her out of the picture, basically. And she says William Regal brought her to the NXT US, to NXT, basically, to dominate just like she did in the UK. I think they're building up her brilliantly. They've done very well, I will say this, with Kaylee Ray, and she merits this. She's so talented. I'm biased, I know, but NXT UK, they didn't just say, oh, she was a champion in NXT UK. They showed you what she was able to do. When Raquel Gonzalez acknowledged her, she pointed out the length of time she was champion. Later on, Ember Moon did the exact same thing. They're making her feel like a big deal.
Yes, indeed. Again, just small, elegant moments of booking between the video packages, the promos, the constant reminders that she did have a ostensibly successful run in NXT UK, winning a title. Doesn't necessarily mean you're a huge success. Did he make an imprint? Did loads of people talk about you online? Did he create discourse? Did he move any needles? None of that, but they've got a robust enough kayfabe explanation as to why she should resonate as a threat to Raquel Gonzalez. This allowed an opportunity to show the personality rather than just the Wikipedia page on screen. So this was strong in that respect. She's definitely got something about Kaylee Ray. I think everyone who follows NXT UK, all of those 14 people will tell you that this is in fact the case. A promising, auspicious start.
Yeah, like you say, we've got the video packages of her beating up, I don't know, Piper Niven or whatever it may be. But I do think for a casual fan, your ears prick up when she says, like, I was the longest reigning champion for 7 years or whatever it was. I felt like that was like, oh, I know that's, you know, you can say 400 days or 600 days or whatever you want to say. I don't know, just saying, like, I've been the person who's had the longest title reign in the last 7 years makes you think, oh, it's pretty impressive. Don't look into it because it's only for your current on. I'm not actually watching that, but still.
She wasn't even working for like half of it.
Yeah, exactly. Right, another interview now. It was Carmelo Hayes who won the NXT Breakout Tournament last week, is it? Time has no meaning to me, to be honest. He's chatting with Mackenzie Mitchell, though, yeah. And in comes Electra Lopez, the latest member, presumably, of Legado del Fantasma, and basically says, congratulations, you know, you've got this contract for a title shot of your choice. Don't get near the North American title, though. That's Santos Escobar's when he beat Swerve for that, basically. And in comes the rest of Legado del Fantasma, or specifically Joaquin Wilde and Raul Mendoza, and they are jaw-jacking, let's say, with Carmelo Hayes. And Escobar says, hey, leave him alone, just remember, the North American title's mine. Stay out of my business. Carmelo Hayes goes, is that a threat? And I was like, yes, Carmelo. I thought that was fairly obvious. But yeah, I mean, Carmelo Hayes versus Santos Escobar is a very tasty potential match.
Yes, absolutely. They can go one or two directions with this. In theory, it's interesting. In theory, it's interesting. It's not really like a big pop off the page thing. Look, they could do Escobar versus Hayes. Would they? Because he's already got a shot. Why would he? They have the potential to make Carmelo Hayes look like an idiot. He could simply ignore Santos Escobar outright and say, well, Swerve's a champion. I'm just going to have a match with him because I'm allowed. Let it play out.
Yeah, do you know what? I will actually say that for this because in terms of like the new, colourful, fun, attention-grabbing, hopefully, NXT in WWE's eyes. Santos Escobar...
Rainbows are attention-grabbing, but they don't actually produce good wrestling.
Yes. Santos Escobar versus Swerve, again, is great. And if never people haven't seen it, there's so much stuff to do there. If you put Carmelo Hayes into that mix, whether it's for singles matches or eventually a quite potentially sensational triple threat between them, that's what the new NXT should be about. Grit and skull stuff.
Skulls.
Speaking of grumpy bastards, Imperium were next. They were facing Drake Maverick and Grayson Bloody Waller. New first appearance in NXT for him, and they had a little pre-taped promo as Imperium were making their serious entrance, where Drake Maverick has sort of changed roles now. Now he's the serious professional.
Jesus Christ.
Trying to calm down Grayson Bloody Waller, who's like, I can't bloody wait till he's swinging there like a bloody koala or something. I don't know, I've got a bit too far there. Anyway, Drake Maverick's there saying, just calm down. We're going to face Imperium. They are former tag champions. He's like, oh, don't worry about it. And they're just pissed off about having to carry Walter's bags. And Drake Maverick just rolls his eyes. I was like, mate, you're in no... People in glass houses, basically. You're in no position to judge. I did like... So they have the match. Grayson Waller insists on starting it off and gets his ass handed to him. Drake Maverick comes in, gets some offense in, gets them in control of the match. And he's sort of setting up for something in the corner. And Grayson Waller, the old backslap tag. Drake Maverick's... No! At that point, we're spectacular. And you know what happens then. Drake Maverick gets hoisted into the bloody lighting grid. And they hit that doomsday device uppercut finisher thing that they've got for Marcel Bartel to cover Grayson Bloody Waller to get the victory for Imperium. This tickled me, this match, just in terms of such a ridiculous role reversal for Drake Maverick.
I mean, it tickled me, but not in the way that they probably intended. Like, repetitive creative bankruptcy that... also at the same time reminds you of someone's redundancy, someone getting released. I'm sure they mentioned other rules have reversed here on NXT as we roll on. Which rule? Oh, yeah, you just reminded me of the guy who got fired. Cool. That's what I really want out of like my mid-card fluff. That's meant to be a little bit of just daft, silly escapism. The hell was this? What on earth was this? It is possible for Drake Maverick to exist as someone who isn't in a Strange Bedfellows tag team, crazy as that is, he could simply be, as a quite tiny man, someone who Roderick Strong could kill.
Mm.
They could build up Roderick Strong using a Drake Maverick. This was so rubbish.
I tell you what,
it was pretty rubbish.
I tell you what, though, I don't know why this has popped into my head, but a team of Drake Maverick and Ikemen Jiro is mouthwatering for me. That's banter.
That's a bit of banter. That's possibly good banter as well. This was not good banter at all. Like, I was just mystified watching this.
I don't blame you.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Right, we have a backstage segment next. Earlier on we got the announcement, I believe there's a little video package confirming that the wedding takes place in 2 weeks, if I'm not mistaken. Wade Barrett Hoyt's special index t-shirt into the crowd because he couldn't give a less of a toss about all this. Please, NXT, I know you've taped all this, so it's bloody pointless. Please give us a stag do next week. If I have two weddings on television, one in AEW, one in NXT, and neither of them have stag do segments, I'm going to flip my biscuit. It's ridiculous, this. It's such an open goal for Patter, and they don't do it. It's infuriating.
AEW didn't do it either.
Yeah.
Just to reiterate that point, because yes, they absolutely have to do this. Like, Dexter Lumis being the boring guy in the stag, who's like, refuses to get in the spirit, who doesn't really contribute to the kitty, because he's just a boring guy who doesn't talk. It's comic gold in there.
Yeah, if you've got the potential of Kip Sabian, Miro, Dexter Lumis, Johnny Gargano, Austin Theory, perhaps, for example, and you pass up all of that to just say, there's a wedding, we'll save all the good stuff for the wedding. Are you saving all the good stuff? Because I'm not confident. I can't remember the last good wrestling wedding we had. I mean, actually, I tell a lie. That was Bobby Lashley and Lana, but not for the reasons you're thinking.
Well, Wilborn, you have to be careful here. What's the best part of the wedding, the stag or the wedding ceremony?
What's this? NXT review stag. Yeah, definitely. She won't listen to this. So I know where I'm at. Did I tell you I had three stags?
You had three stags?
Three stags. One in Newcastle for all the people around here. One in Chesterfield, hometown. One in Amsterdam. Carnage.
I just had a home and away leg. An away leg in Hamburg and a home leg just in the Usburn area of Newcastle up on Tyne. But it's class, like, I mean, it's very heavily skewed towards men. Like, for whatever reason, this has happened with every sort of one of my, it happened with me and it happened with all my close friends who got married. All the girls are like, let's have a trip to York.
Yeah.
An overnight in York. It's like, let's have two nights in Cologne, one night in Dusseldorf. We'll go whitewater rafting. We'll put them in a. We'll put the stag in like a KY jelly pool with strippers.
What did you dress up?
Saw his knob.
Did you have a costume? What costumes did you
I was
have?
A luchador.
Oh, that's good.
Because
that.
Like, I'm the wrestling guy of the group. But that's a nice little layer. We'll make cocktails. A cocktail in York. All right, okay. Well, whitewater rafting.
The missus went on one recently, and she did. She learnt a dance from Greece, and I was like, "Yeah, like the same. Like, we'll funnel alcohol into him until he passes out."
I saw my mate's cock covered in grease.
Guess what I was dressed as on my stag do? See if you can guess. Ginger spice, of course it was. Right, what are we doing? But yeah, absolutely, do a stag do. In this segment, it just reminds you about Gargano. He's getting ready, of course, to face LA Knight. And Indy Hartwell's there saying, give Dex Lumis a chance. He's like, I don't want to give that knob. And a chance turned around. He stood right there and he goes, oh, stop doing that, basically. But yeah, Johnny Gargano, I'm stagging you. This is your stag. Would be absolutely spectacular stuff. And, oh, it will be such a disappointment if they don't do anything with this next week.
I mean, they have to. It's what you do. You go on a stag.
Yeah.
Oh, I love how we've not even mentioned. Oh, you know what? Indy Hartwell should have a hen do.
Yeah. Oh, that is, it'd be great patter as well. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah, Indy Hartwell's a great comedy performer, but it just proves how massively sexist the whole thing is.
Yeah.
It just is.
Yeah, Candice, you know, Candice LeRae.
Indy Hartwell, Candice LeRae. They can go to York. And Dexter, Johnny. Don't know if Austin Theory should be going. They can all go to Prague.
Take Cameron Grimes.
Yes. Yeah, because he can get them in the VIP rooms.
Yeah.
Prague's
that's the lad you invite. I don't really like him, but he's got a bit of wedge, so, you know.
Prague's a good one.
Yeah. Big changes in NXT coming, including Rich Bloody Holland saying hospital. What? He said hospital. Thought it was a local medical facility. That's where he was going to send Ciampa.
Local medical facility.
Yeah. I'm going to batter you and send you to hospital, basically. That's what he said.
Send you to local facility.
And then, speaking of being people being sent to local medical facilities, Saray had been beaten up backstage quite blatantly by Gigi Dolin and JC Jane, but who possibly did it? Then they walked out of the room as it happened.
Their acting was no good.
Right, let's move on to Johnny Gargano versus LA Knight. LA Knight in control early on, back and forth sort of stuff here. But Gargano sends him to the outside, hits a suicide dive, but Knight regains control on the outside, batters it and takes the piss out of Loomis and Hart. Well, God damn you. We come back from the break. Knight is still in control. He misses a knee drop, though, so that allows Gargano to hit a downward spiral and the slingshot spear. But then Knight recovers and hits a pop-up power slam. Did like that where he dropped him backwards instead of forwards. That was very impressive from LA Knight and something different from him. Gargano goes for one final beat, but Knight counters it. He knocks Gargano off the apron into the arms of an angel. No, into the arms of Dexter Loomis, who catches him. Great visual. Great, you know, preposterous overreaction from Johnny Gargano. This isn't supposed to happen. But he looks like he's recovered and got LA Knight in a position where he can hit his finisher and win. And akin to what he does with Austin Theory, the high five, LA Knight, is it LA Knight what I'm talking about? Dexter Loomis holds out his hand. Johnny Gargano distracts himself going for that. And LA Knight hits his BFT finisher for the 1-2-3. Dexter Loomis screws Johnny Gargano.
I don't know what the hell this was.
No, I don't either, to be honest.
The match itself, like, what is Johnny Gargano? He plays this total dog. Quite brilliantly, I might add, on this NXT TV show, as a mid-card guy whose main event career appears to be over. And yet, when he's in the ring, he's just like babyface super worker who barely cheats. It's like, can you not have a bit of fun with it? LA Knight's been really fun. Have more fun. And got this just was sometimes a bit of drab, quote-unquote, good wrestling. Like, be dicks to each other.
It's the
explore
thing.
Like your characters in the context of the match. Like Johnny Gargano being caught cheating, selling it as if he's like butter wouldn't melt, oblivious to it. Like, have a dickhead off.
Yeah. We say this all the time. When they book these weird sort of heel versus heel matches, we go, well, it's completely counterintuitive, you know, especially in WWE where they have defined heels and faces, and that's the way that it works with the WWE style. And then we see these matches and we go, well, no, hang on, give it a second. There might be some potential, like you say, to see who can, you know, do the screwiest thing. Like, they both kick each other in the dick, but they're both wearing cups because they're sneaky little bastards or something like that. And then they just go, no, just have a 5-10 minute match. Just trade, go back and forth, and then distraction finish. And it's like, again, so much potential there to showcase these characters of the fact that there's no heroes in this match, apart from Dexter Loomis and Indy Hartwell. But in reality, they just had a back and forth house show match.
It's just so odd in the finish as well. Like, they continually make their talents look like idiots. Johnny Gargano could not have looked more like an idiot here. Oh my God, he's showing me sign of friendship. You're in a match. You're in a fight, you little tit.
You wanted to cancel the wedding last week.
And the stories that we're telling, this is a development. I think we're warming to each other.
He's trying to communicate.
Yes. Like, he looked like a dick. He looked like an idiot. Dexter Loomis, what was it like? Dexter Loomis is Dusty Rhodes. Put your hand to the television. Reach out to me. It's like this powerful, spellbinding, classic promo where he's like, people legitimately, I guarantee, would have been putting their hand on the telly when Dusty Rhodes was doing that. Dexter Loomis. Like, eating pork and beans. And Johnny Gargano was inspired by this to give him a high five. Like, honestly, what on earth is this? And at some point, and it happens frequently throughout this run where Johnny Gargano's just an idiot, we'll be expert. I'm going to wrestle Kushida in a great 4 3/4 stop. How could I possibly give a toss?
Yeah, exactly. Right, we get MSK. They're backstage going to William Regal's office, and they say they want to give Oney Lorcan and Danny Burch a shot at the titles because they never lost the titles, of course, with Danny Burch's injury. And Regal agrees and books the tag team title match for next week on NXT. Later on, we'll get a second one added, but never mind all that bollocks. Next week, Mia Yim's debuting. It's happening.
Ah, can't wait.
I'm so excited.
We should dedicate much of the preview, if not all of it, to this development.
She's going to get put in a headlock by someone.
I know. It's like the dragon, I'll tell you how to escape a hammerlock. You know what I mean? It's like the Triple H Trish Stratus segment.
Yeah.
The dragon was like bending her over.
Sure, that's like love.
To like the other dragon. I can't wait, man.
Yeah.
The woman who was trained by a 1,000-year-old dragon, or the 1,000-year-old woman who was trained by a dragon. It's like the dragon's like, you know, bend over a little bit. Yeah. Shit. Like, it's called the hemlock, not a wristwatch.
It is going to be, and there's going to be a point in that match, regardless if that doesn't happen, where someone's going to go, I think I figured out how to beat the 1,000-year-old dragon lady. Roll up.
What I love about this, if you apply a bit of thought to it, like, Xylee's in like that weird purgatory. Come on, let's do a dark match. Yeah, don't care about you. Triple H has like written out all these storylines and they're not in. They're in the void.
Yeah.
Not a great place for them, but that's where they are, the void. And the whole idea is like Xylee's been banished for her failings. Boa also sucks. It's time for Ma Ying to show people the real power of Shansha and like be great in the ring and be all powerful. This match has to last 3 seconds and she has to like incinerate or like kill this person.
Yeah.
And she's going to do like a, yeah, great technique on that arm drag.
She's going to be in peril and she's going to go, time to, I think, spit the deadly mist in their eyes. There we go. Job done. Oh, I'm so excited. Right, we've got a swash match effectively next. Jesse Camilla fighting Raquel Gonzalez. She's got a bit of tiny bit of offense in. Snaps Raquel Gonzalez's leg over the top rope after getting out of a suplex. Gets a near fall, but Gonzalez recovers. Drop kicks her into the corner. Hits her finisher. 1, 2, 3. And then Frankie Monet stared her down. Is that where they're going next, you reckon?
I hope not.
That seemed to be the suggestion.
She's not resonating as a world champion at all.
No. But Robert Stone looks great. That's the main thing. I love him.
Yeah, I do like him a lot.
More of that sort of thing. Right, we get a response from Ember Moon to the Kaylee Ray stuff earlier. It's her birthday. Happy belated birthday to Ember Moon from all of us here at What Culture. And she responds to Kaylee Ray, as I said, though, and says, let's have a match next week on NXT. Good. Have Kaylee Ray batter Ember Moon next week to set her up.
Tried and true NXT booking. And for once, I'm not being a... euphemistic there.
Mm.
They've had a long history of using someone that fans have an attachment to, who's not really in the main event mix, to get over as a credible scalp for the new person coming in. More than happy with this. Should be a good cracking little match as well.
Then we got a sit-down interview, the first sit-down interview with the new NXT champion, 3-time NXT champion, Samoa Joe. God, I'd love to go for beers with these two. Wade Barrett and Samoa Joe.
I wouldn't.
Sitting down. Joe talks about setting a precedent as the standard bearer for NXT and talks about the mad weekend he had, basically. He was in Las Vegas scouting NXT talent. He was working all weekend. Then he took a red-eye flight back here because he needed to win the NXT title. It's now time to defend it. If anyone wants something, come and try and take it from him. What did you think of this?
I wish wrestlers would just shut up, like, in real life. Samoa Joe's been fed-pilled.
Oh, yeah.
He was a huge
part. I forgot about it. I wonder why you said you didn't want to go for it. And then I remembered, yeah.
He would tell us how great WWE is over 5 pints. That's what he would do. Being fed-pilled, man. He was asked about the Forbidden Door and clearly is jelly. And he claims to not want any part of it because he knows he can't. So he's like, he wouldn't loan out Lionel Messi. What's that? If Lionel Messi was in NXT, he wouldn't have any worries at all, pal. So, yeah, he was talking in the press about how he hates Forbidden Door despite starring in the ROH versus CCW feud, which was absolutely awesome, intricate, must-see, just fabulous storytelling that when it finished, both promotions, respectively, were left in a state of decent health. He also had a great match with pro wrestling notes Kenta Kobashi at an ROH show. And now he's talking about how he doesn't need the Forbidden Door. Like, it really helped his career enormously.
Mm.
So, don't get fed-pilled, simply, and I will enjoy your TV segments more. But I'm not just saying this out of spite. Him being office in canon, I don't like that.
No.
Just be the badass. People were really happy about Samoa Joe coming in. I remember it sparked actual conversation on NXT because people liked, they've got a badass at last. And now he's like playing office and he's like, Christ's got to do these bloody jobs.
Yeah, the whole point of Stone Cold wasn't that he went, I want to be this beer-drinking, badass, stunnering everyone left, right, and centre, but, you know, 9 to 5, I'll put a tie on. Like, that was the whole point that he didn't do that, and everyone was like, yep, all that.
I know he's like, he is in office in NXT storylines where he was, but for him talking about how he's a workhorse and he's scouting talent and he's trying to be the face of the new NXT on and off screen, I don't give a toss about any of that.
No.
Because he can't make any difference whatsoever. None whatsoever. It is unlike something like Cody in November or October 2019 when he's talking about his executive role and how proud he is of AEW. Like, yes, because people loved him for what he was doing in AEW because he was creating this new world. Samoa Joe can only sit there, talk about how it's all great, even if it's bad. This ruins his credibility for me and his aura.
In the words of, I can't remember who said this, he's just a spoke on a wheel and that wheel's just going to keep on turning.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
Right. As you called, Ikemen Jiro versus Roderick Strong. He was the one to answer the open challenge. And as we talked about on the preview,
it's like saying, I'm going to call out one of the headbangers. Who's it going to be? Chesa Marsh.
Yes. They showed the video that we talked about, the WWE.com exclusive, saying he was going to defend the honor of his idol, Kushida, basically. Diamond Mine's got bigger again. They've got the Creed brothers now part of it. And Ikemen Jiro, there was a bit where he just did a move with his coat, which made me laugh. He just sort of went, "Way!" like a flasher.
Of course it did.
But he did get some great offense in, but then he got hip tossed into the steps, and yeah, it was all Roderick Strong's pretty much after that. He did get a near fall, I will say, off an Arabian moonsault, Jiro, but in the end, Strong just went to what he knows best and just murdered Ikemen Jiro's back, hitting with a backbreaker, a falling backbreaker. 1, 2, 3. Roderick Strong living up to his name in that result, I suppose.
I should have seen the face that dickhead has just pulled at me. Unbelievable. This is exactly what it was going to be. And I can't really say much more other than that. But with the addition of the Creed brothers, having buried the Diamond Mine for shrinking in their ranks, I welcome this development with arms wide open.
I see what he did there. Very good. Very, very good.
Tyler Russ in the background. My sacrifice.
You know who Tyler Russ looks like? He's like Jack Simon Pegg.
Get to the main event.
Okay. Casey Catanzaro, Kane Carter in the back. They're in a back and forth with the NXT Women's Tag Team Champions, Io Shirai and Zoe Stark. They're saying that they've earned this shot, basically. Zoe Stark says, "Don't care, we're going to batter you." And Io Shirai says she doesn't like everyone, but she likes Kayden Carr and Casey Catanzaro even less than she dislikes Zoe Stark. So we're going to win, basically. And Zoe Stark's like, "Yeah." Turns around to Kayden and Casey. "Yeah, that's right." Goes to fist bump. Io Shirai's already left.
Zoe Stark has got no comic timing whatsoever.
Nope.
Why would they give her this role? I'm not being funny. I would complain either way. Let the wrestlers wrestle. All right, that's boring. All right, give the wrestlers some personality. Well, you know.
Send the wrestlers to a sushi restaurant.
It's just absolute hot garbage. Absolute hot garbage, all of this.
Well, thankfully, it was recovered by the greatest backstage segment possibly in NXT's history because it featured everyone I like. It was Ian Kerrigan, baby, to the moon. Talking about...
Just looking at Adam Wilborn's notes, and this is so endearing, to the moon is capitalized.
Yeah. Just to remind myself, he's there. He's chatting about, you know, what happens now and, you know, $1 million championship. Moving on from that with Ted DiBiase, of course. When in come the grizzled young veterans, they take the piss out of Cameron Grimes, you know, winning or holding a replica championship. And they say, "Hey, you never know, next week you could win the North American championship. Or even you could be Universal Champion if you buy it from WWEshop.com. Ha, ha, ha. What a bunch of knobheads, basically. And Cameron Grimes says, "Oh, can I have a look at that?" And yeah, I thought he was just going to twat him with the belt, but even more spectacular physical comedy here because he looks at it, he goes, "Oh, do you know what? These replica belts, they're pretty good. Good shilling for WWE shop as well, by the way. These are bigger and heavier than you realize." Drops it. It lands on Zach Gibson's foot. He sells it. He's absolutely fuming. And Cameron Grimes throws money at the problem and walks off. Brilliant. Best segment in NXT, this, for me.
History, yes.
Anything?
Nah, it's just it was funny. Funny.
Yeah, good. You've got one of these. I don't know. A little nose laugh. And we get to the main event. It was Ridgeley Holland versus Tommaso Ciampa. Of course, at ringside for Ridge Holland, there was only Lork and Danny Burch and Peyton. And this is all about getting revenge again, as we talked about earlier with the Timothy Thatcher stuff. And they really do brawl all over the place. They go outside the ring. Ciampa's, you know, in control here. You know, he's the more experienced wrestler despite Ridge Holland's size. But the numbers game, i.e. Lorcan, Birch and Peyton, particularly Lorcan and Birch. So distracts Ciampa. That allows him to hit Ridge Holland to hit him with a bloody pounce in amongst all this. Ciampa comes back, hits some lariats, gets a near fall off the back of it. And Holland recovers, though, fights out of something and hits a Alabama slam. And a nice moment where, well, not nice, obviously, but where they sort of, you know, cover his history of neck problems, Tommaso Ciampa, and the referee's checking on him. Ridge Holland's having to be held back because he wants to batter him so much. He gets a near fall off the back of it. The match continues. Again, they go to the outside. Ciampa gets headbutted by Holland. He power slams him into the barricade, but Holland goes to charge into him. Ciampa gets out of the way, and Holland just slams into the barricade. Power slams Ciampa off the apron, or goes to at least, sorry. Ciampa fights free, hits him with a Willow's Bell. 1, 2, 3. Tommaso Ciampa gets revenge on Ridge Holland for Toothless Timmy. He gets the victory, but before he can celebrate, in comes Pete Dunne to attack him. Also, Lorcan and Birch help him, holding Ciampa up for an attack from Pete Dunne. When MSK, who are, of course, defending the tag titles next week against Birch and Lorcan, come down to make the save in a big brawl to close the show. What did you think of the main event?
I think they're building towards a War Games match.
Ooh.
As a result, I think, as I said yesterday, very consistent I am, that Ciampa should get the win here. I understand that it potentially risks Holland going 50-50, but the idea is he's this big, raw bruiser who's not yet the finished article, who's been drafted by your Duns et al. As this big, hard lad who's like new in the game, very promising, but you can beat people like that with the inbuilt reason of they don't have the experience to hang with a Ciampa that can take them to the limit, but they can't put them away every time. I'm thinking MSK, Thatcher and Ciampa versus Ridgeley Holland, Dunne, Birch, Lorcan for
it's
War
a good
Games.
Match.
And that should be thrilling. MSK in War Games will be absolutely unbelievable.
Especially when they get the 2-on-1 numbers advantage because the babyface.
Absolutely. Should be a great bit of tandem high spots there. Jesus Christ. No, they've literally only done that once. I just like to take the piss. That sounds
too many times.
Indeed. That sounds like a cracking War Games match. Loads of different types of cool stuff. Like high spots, then you've got like just total brute force savagery, nice technical heel work. It will make, and it's the best possible use of, there are at least three terminally dull characters. Great wrestlers, but at least three terminally dull characters involved in this storyline, which appears to be sprawling outwards. Hoy them in the War Games cage and make them interesting.
Are they going to try and do, you know, that mad, I love the spot where one of MSK flips and the other one pushes them onto
over the ropes.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a fair distance to go that, but I believe that they can do it.
Ah, class, eh? Just don't do like ridiculous like weapons for the sake of weapons. Like the cage itself is a weapon that should be used more and sold more.
Mm.
It doesn't really resonate as this big, huge, ominous like thing that can really damage you when there's like tables and fire extinguishers and like bins.
I've been on the head though, it's good batter.
Aye. Take all the weapons out and just have a War Games match.
Yeah.
Yes, and that one specifically, which it feels like it's building towards. So on that basis, I've got no qualms about Ridgeley Holland getting beat. The match itself was passable.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. It's a simple story. Big old bastard Ridgeley Holland, incredibly talented wrestler, still doing all the fun backslapping spots that he does that pops the crowd. And like you say, developments with this story, you've got Toothless Timmy to come back. Now MSK appears to be on that side, I think. Sorry, Timothy Thatcher. I just got used to calling him that today. But yeah, potentially. I didn't even consider a War Games match. It's a hell of a shout.
It's the season.
Yeah, let us know. Yeah,
no, it isn't.
Getting there. We're getting there. It's like November, isn't it? They can drag this out for a few more weeks.
Sure will.
Oh, the storyline's going to change in 2 weeks. It's going to be fine.
They should do it as like the end of Triple H's era. Because if nothing else, the fact that he got War Games on NXT was very much, oh Christ, he's getting his own way, because Vince always hated the idea. He's like, well, you're missing some ringside seats there, pal.
Yeah.
He's such a cheap bastard. Well, I would never do War Games because two rings means that there's less ringside seats.
But think about this. Two rings, which means you can have two different colours. So, new NXT.
Oh my God. You've ruined it.
I haven't ruined it. I've synergy. of old and new merging together. One ring, skulls. Other ring, rainbows.
Skulls and rainbows. If I was ever going to do an NXT sequel book, I would call it that.
Right, let us know your thoughts on this week's NXT on Twitter.
I'm going to do a different book instead.
Ambassador, you're swarming us. At What Culture WWE on Twitter. You can follow both of us watching there. You can follow Michael Sidgwick at
M Sidgwick.
More little teasers like that sort of thing. You can follow me on Twitter at Adam Wilborn for memes. Follow all of us, as I said, at What Culture WWE, and make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling wherever you get your podcasts from for daily wrestling podcasts, including later on today our AEW Dynamite preview. But for now, this has been the NXT review. My thanks to Michael Sidgwick. Thank you for joining us, and we see you soon.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.